process of searching for a set of dalet minim can be quite challenging. First of all, there are many halachos to consider in determining whether a particular item is kosher or pasul tzvam. But then there are a whole host of other issues to think about, like how much is a person obligated to spend for hidden mitzvah, what constitutes hidden mitzvah, is there any limitation on the kind of kinyan that a person has to use to acquire his set of dalet minim. These are just some of the issues to think about when going to purchase a set of dalet minim. So let's first discuss some of the more general issues relating to the dalet minim themselves, and if we have a little time at the end of this year, we'll talk about some of the other issues as well. There are many beautiful svarim that have been published recently on Hilchas dalet minim. Perhaps the most famous is Rav Yechiel Michal Stern's Kashrus Arba'as Haminim, which was published over 20 years ago in Tavshin Nun Beis. It was a breakthrough sefer. It's become a reference for many people in this area because it not only collects a lot of the halachos in this limud, but it also provides the pictures. And with the pictures, it's much easier to see what is being described by the halachos. So I'll use some of the pictures that he has in these svarim, in this sefer, and hopefully that'll serve as an aid to explain some of the halachas that we're describing. Let's start with the esrik. What is there to look for in an esrik? So the first thing a person has to determine is whether the esrik is a murkav or not a murkav. Is it grafted or is it a real esrik? Why is an esrik hamurkav pasul? Poskim write that an esrik hamurkav is pasul. So why is it pasul? The Levush writes, it's pasul because nevdebo avera. Since an avera was done in grafting the esrik tree, so if one uses the esrik for the mitzvah, it'll be what we call a mitzvah haba ba'avera. Just parenthetically, why do people graft the esrik tree? Why is that done? So as the scientists point out, the esrik tree is a very weak tree. So it's hard for the esrik tree to survive. It disintegrates after a while. So they graft it with other types of fruit trees in order to strengthen it a little bit. But that's the problem. The Levush would say that it's a mitzvah haba ba'avera. And the Magen Avraham says that it's possible for a simpler reason. It's possible simply because it's not an esrik. An esrik hamurkav is not an esrik b'chlal. It's grafted. That's not an esrik. It has to be pure in order to be an esrik. They tell a story that once Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, the Rav's father, was asked why an esrik hamurkav is possible. So he took out a Shulchan Aruch and he showed them Hilchas Esrik. He says if the first step is that it has to be an esrik, so this is not an esrik, there's nothing to talk about. So he seems to be following the approach of the Magen Avraham, that an esrik hamurkav is pasul simply because it's not an esrik at all. The Rama has a famous tshuva where he describes that there are four simanim for an esrik. There are four signs that you can check an esrik and determine whether it's an esrik and not a murkav. First of all, that it has blitos. As we see in the picture over here, there are bumps. There are bumps in the esrik. Right? The sides of the esrik, there are bumps. If you take a lemon, it's smooth, the skin is smooth. That's simon number one. Simon number two, the ukitz is shakua. You know, the pitum is the stem that's on top of the esrik, and the ukitz is the stem on the bottom. The stem on the bottom is shakua. It's supposed to be sunken into the esrik. As you see in the picture over here as well, it's a little hard to see, but there's a little bit of esrik on the bottom there that the ukitz is sunken into, the bottom stem. What's more, a third simen is that the klipa is over, the peel is thick. If you look at a lemon, you cut open the lemon, you'll see the peel is thicker. You take a side view of the lemon, when it's cut open, you'll see the peel is thicker. But in esrik, the peel is thinner, but the esrik, the peel is thick. And finally, the seeds are vertical in an esrik. These are the four simanim that the Rama writes in a tshuva, can identify what is an esrik and what is an esrik hamurkav. So according to the Rama, it would seem as though you just look at the simanim and that can tell you whether the esrik is not murkav. The Chasam Sofer writes in a tshuva, though, that you can't be machshir an esrik without a misora. You need a misora that this is coming from a real esrik tree. So that Chasam Sofer prompted many Hasidic communities. The Hasidim are very fond of using the Chasam Sofer in Psak. So many Hasidic communities are very careful to have a mesorah for the esrog. They'll buy Dafka from a Chazanish paradise, as they call it. The Chazanish esrogim have nothing to do with the size of the esrog. Normally we think of Chazanish as being a larger shear. It doesn't mean that a Chazanish esrog is a football. It's nothing to do with size. It's that it comes from a paradise that the Chazanish identified. He felt that that was a good paradise. It's interesting. I mean, where did the Chazanish know this from? So they say that the story they give is that the Chazanish was walking in the... It was walking in the fields, and he saw a tree. He saw that that esrogim were growing from the tree, and it was like an abandoned tree. So he surmised, he guessed that if it's an abandoned tree, it must be that it probably wasn't grafted. Because why would people just have one tree just, you know, sitting there, hefker? So he assumed, and I guess he had more than just an assumption, but he had a premonition, he had a certain feeling that it was a kosher esrog tree. So he told some of his talmidim to take from that tree and to replant in other places that they'll be able to have a kosher esrog tree. So that's one place from the paradise chazanish, something that comes from a zan of the chazanish. Doesn't necessarily have to be from the original paradise, but they sometimes take from the original paradise and they replant elsewhere. Yanover esrogim are very popular. Those are Italian esrogim. Reb Chaim felt Moroccan esrogim were a little bit better. So these are the different types of esrogim that some communities are very makbid on because they want to make sure that it's not a morkav. Moroccan is a big shaila. It's a big machlokas in the Hasidic communities. The Satmar like it very much, and the Kloisenbergers did not like it. The Kloisenberger Rebbe once gave a drasha Yom Kippur, saying that if you take a Moroccan esrog, it's like taking a banana. It's not too good. But the Satmar Hasidim feel it's the best esrog. It's most miuchistic. So it's a big question. Moroccan esrogim, the shaila knows esrogim is that they don't have seeds. So the question is, is there some other reason why they don't have the seeds, or is it because it's a morkov? That's the shaila. The badatz is noheg to simply check a number of esrogim in a particular paradise for the simonim that the Rama suggests, and based on that, they'll paskin that esrog grove is kosher. There's no mesores for it. There's no mesora, but they follow the Rama. Straight to the letter, so they'll paskin based on those simonim as to whether the paradise is a kosher paradise or not. So those who want to use the badatz esrogim, that's fine, that follows the Rama. Those who want to be more machmer and use the paradise and the chazanish, matot, that's also good. The chazanish esrogim are a lot more expensive though, so it's not so clear that you have to really be machmer for that. But that might not be a hidden mitzvah. You see, that's the problem. It could be that if an esrog hamurkav is not called an esrog, so it's not that you're spending more to get an esrog mahudah, but rather you're spending more just to get an esrog. So I don't know if you have to be so machmir. It seems like Rove of Klal Yisrael assumes that the simonim of the Ramah are enough to be somechan. The Badat certainly assumes like that. So I think if you want to spend a little bit less, then you want to be makel for the Badat esrogim, that's probably good enough. The most famous psul by an esrog is probably that the pitum has fallen off. Nidla pitmasam. That's what they teach all of the kids in preschool, that if the pitum falls off the esrog, gevalt, it's pasam. Be'emes, that's the Mishnah. Mishnah in Sukkah and Daflam Adalim and Beis writes that nidla pitmasam pasam. Oh, the pitum is right here. Right, if the pitum on top of the esrog, if it falls off, as you see in the picture, it's pasam. Probably don't have to give you a picture. It's happened to you before. In every family, after you know, every couple of years, this kind of thing happens, either before the Yom Tov or during the Yom Tov. So it is true that nitla pitmasa is possible, but the question is, what does nitla pitmasa mean? So many people have a tendency of thinking that nitla pitmasa is even if that ball on the top of the pitum falls off, that's enough to say that the pitum has fallen off. That ball is called the shoshanta. Right, the top of the pitum is the shoshanta, and the rest of it is still part of the pitum. The eitz, the stem underneath that shoshanta, is also part of the pitum. So people have a tendency of thinking that if nitla ha-shoshanta, if the ball is fallen off, that's also called nitla pitmasa, and it will be posel. Rov Rishonim don't assume like that. Rov Rishonim, Rashi, and the Rambam, and others on that Mishnah assume that the pitum is not only the ball on top, not just the shoshanta, but the whole stem. The whole stem has to fall off in order for nitla pitmasa to kick in. So that's quite a cooler. It's quite a cooler for the whole stem. It's very rare that the whole stem falls off. Normally the ball falls off. Stem is not as brittle. It's not as sensitive as the ball on top, as the, I'm not sure if it's a ball, but it's some kind of a head covering, if you will. Right? So the stem is not as sensitive as that ball on top. The Magen Avraham writes that only if the entire stem falls off would we say that that's nitla pitmasa when the esrog is going to be pasul. The problem is the Ran. The Ran understood in the Rif that the Rif felt that even if the kadur, as they call it, even if only the ball on top falls off, that's also nitla pitmasa when it's going to be pasul. So the Rama writes that there are those who are noeg lahachmer, like this understanding of the Rif, the Ran's understanding of the Rif. But the Mishnah Berurah is not convinced that the Rif even said it. Mishnah Berurah feels that you don't have to be a machmer for the Rif. That's a chumra of the Rama to follow that understanding of the Rif, the Ran's understanding. But the Mishnah Berurah says he doesn't really think that you have to be so machmer. He says, look, if you have two esrog and one doesn't have the kadur, one doesn't have the shoshanta, and the other one does, it's probably better to take the one with the shoshanta. He says, but you don't have to be machmer so much. Let's say the other one is much more mehudadik. It's not so clear that you have to be machmer to take dafka the one that has the shoshanta on it. So certainly, if a person bought an esrog with a pitim, and then on chalamoy the pitim, the shoshanta, let's say, fell off, so you don't have to be machmer for that, because to be machmer so much for the Ran's understanding of the Rif, not so clear that you really have to be so machmer. And in most circumstances, the eights, the stem is not going to fall off. It's just going to be the shoshanta on top that falls off. So this newfangled idea to get pitim insurance, you know, it's a great moneymaker for the pitim insurance people, but I'm not so sure that you really need it, because you probably can assume that even if the pitim, even if the shoshanta falls off, most of the stem is still going to remain. And if most of the stem remains, it's kosher. The esrog is kosher. What's more, there's another reason that you could be mekil, even if the whole pitim falls off, not just the shoshanta, but the whole stem. The other reason to be mekil after the first day of Yom Tov is, the question is, what's the psul of nitla pitmaso all about? What's the nature of this psul? There are many different psulim when it comes to dalamina. But there are different reasons why there are psulim, different reasons for the psul. Sometimes we find different items that are possible because they're chaser. Let's say you take a bite out of the esrog. Take a bite out of the esrog, it's missing something, it's chaser, that's a psul. But then there are other psulei esrog that we find that are because of hadar. Right, we know that the esrog is called a pre-eitz hadar. It's more than just hiddur mitzvah. It has to have a certain beauty to it. Hadar. Yovesh is possible because it's not hadar. It's not because of chaser. Nothing is missing from the esrog, but it's still possible because it lacks hadar. Now, there's a big difference between chaser and hadar when it comes to the other days of Yom Tov. The Gemara in Sukkah and Daf Lamed Vav and Aleph says Rabbi Chanina was matbil ba v'nafik ba. He was matbil ba, he dipped the esrog, he took a bite out of the esrog, and he was nafik, but he was yotze with this esrog after the first day. Not the first day, but after the first day. Now, why do you do something like that? He didn't have lunch, he didn't have breakfast, he had to eat the esrog. So, mistama, it was to show other people that you can still be yotze with chaser after the first day. Pasuk says, Lukachtam lechem bayom harishon. So, bayom harishon, you need a lukachtam lechem. It has to be a lekicha tama. It has to be a complete lekicha. It can't be chaser, it can't be missing anything. But bayom arishon, and not the other days. So on the other days, it's not bayom arishon. Even if it's not a lekicha tama, it's still going to be kosher. So chaser is only possible bayom arishon, and maybe even yom tov sheni, which might have a din of yom arishon. That's a question. But on the days of chalamoy, the other days after yom arishon, it's not going to passel. So chaser is only a psul for the first day. But how about hadar? So hadar is a big question. It's a machlokas rishonim whether hadar passels only on the first day. Does it passel even on the other days? Then it's a machlokas machaber amah had a paskim ladina. The machaber is takamekim. The amah is machmer. So putting two and two together, let's now plug this into nidla pitmasa. Why tak is nidla pitmasa a pasel? So the amah writes that if the pitum falls off, it's pasel because of chaser. The esrog is missing something. So according to the amah, there's nothing to talk about that after the first day of Ad, it's kosher. The Gemara says that chaser only passes the first day. Rabbi Chanina was matbil ba v'nafik ba. So it's a beferish Gemara. Chaser only passes the first day. But even if you want to say like some of the other achronim, the Magen Avraham called some achronim who assume that nitla pitmaso might be possible because it's lacking hodah. Even if you assume like them, you still have the machaber in your back pocket. The machaber says that hodah also only passes the first day. So some of the achronim point out that you have a sveka lakula here. That first of all, nidla pitmasa might only be possible because of chaser. And if it's only possible because of chaser, it's missing something, it's not lekicha tama, that clearly is only going to passel the first day. And even if you'll tell me that nidla pitmasa is possible because of hadar, The Mechaber says that Hadar doesn't passel the other days either. Hadar and Chaser are the same. So even though the Ramah is machmer in that, the Ramah himself claims that Lubit Mazar is only passel because of Chaser. So either way you slice it, after the first day, there shouldn't be a problem. Because right? According to the Ramah, it's only possible because of Chaser, which is a psul only on the first day. And the Mechaber, and even if you'll say it's a psul of Hadar, the Mechaber says that Hadar only passes the first day also. So that's why many poskim say that you don't have to be so fahit, so crazy about Nidla Pit Maso after the first day. For the first day, you should try to be careful about it. And even on the first day, if the Shoshanta, if only the Shoshanta fell off, but the stem is still there, there's room to be Megal too. I think Rabbi Simon tells the story. Rabbi Shafter was once looking at Esrogim before Yom Tif, and he was spending a lot of time looking at an Esrog that didn't have a Shoshant on it. He liked it a lot. I don't remember if he took it or didn't take it, but he wasn't bothered with the fact that the Shoshanta wasn't there because it was such a beautiful Esrog anyway. So, I mean, Rabbi Shafter is the kind of person who, you know, he knows exactly what he's looking for, and it's not going to bother him that the Shoshanta is not there. Some of us, you know, the Shoshanta is not on the Esrog, we'll like feel funny taking it. But Meikar Adin, it's probably completely kosher. Even according to the Rif, the Mishnah Berurah says even according to the Rif, it's kosher. But there are other hidurim in the Esrog. There might be room to choose this Esrog over another Esrog. But you know, even if you're not going to choose an Esrog that lost its Shoshanta for the first day, but certainly if the Shoshanta fell off during Yom Tov, you don't have to take your friend's Esrog. You can take your own Esrog. You might feel funny doing it. Maybe people look at you strange. But you can tell them, don't worry about it. I know it's fine. It's perfectly kosher. You come to me after Yom Tov and I'll give you a shir. Okay, another famous psul of an Esrog is Shinui Marim. Let's say there's a discoloration. So the Gemara, Mishnah, the Gemara explains, the Gemara in Daf Lamed Hei Amud Beis says that if also chazozis, if a chazozis, some kind of a blemish, grew on the Esrog, then the Esrog is possible. So the Gemara explains that if also chazozis only in a miut, in a minority of the Esrog, b'mokom echad, it's only like one little area where there's a blemish, then it's kosher. But if it's b'shnayim or shloshim mekomos, if it's in two or three places, then it's going to be, then it's posel. Why is it posel? Dafka b'shnayim or shloshim mekomos, what shnayim or shloshim mekomos? The Gemara says it's posel because it's like menumer, as they call it. It's like a spotted Esrog. It's a problem of hadar. It's not hadar, it's not beautiful. Because it's menumer, it's a spotted Esrog. So the Rosh there writes that not only if also chazozis, if a blemish grew on the Esrog, but even if a black discoloration or a white discoloration, a mare shachar or a mare lavan, that are not mimare ha Esrog, that's not the way an Esrog is. You don't have a large black splotch on the Esrog or a large white splotch. So the Rosh says in that case, even if it's not a chazozis sounds like it's something scary there that's growing on the Esrog. Just a discoloration, the Rosh says. A black or white discoloration, that also passes the Esrog, if it's b'shnayim or shloshim mekomos. Oh. If it's b'shnayim or shloshim mekomos. The question is, what does b'shnayim or shloshim mekomos mean? So the Rosh writes, not just two or three places, but it has to be two or three places that cover most of the surface area of the Esrog. That's how the Rosh explains, quoting from the Rishon. And the Mishnah Berurah passed it this way. Now, what does that mean, Rov HaShetach, most of the area? The Chazon Ish here is Mekel. The Chazon Ish assumes that it's only like the bottom picture, that it's Rov of the area of the Esrog, not Rov of the circumference of the Esrog. That's the previous picture. Not Rov of the circumference. Right there, right in the middle, there's Rov of the circumference and covered with the black spots. And it's not Rov of the other direction of the Esrog. I'm not sure what to call it, top to bottom, right? But rather, Rov of the surface area, the whole surface area of the Esrog. Not just the circumference and not just top to bottom, but rather the whole surface area. Some of the Achronim are Machmer, even in Rov Hekef, Rov of the circumference of the Esrog, that might pass. But the Chazon Ish is Mekel, I think we can be Mekel too. But like if you have this, the three dots all in this area, forget that third dot over there. You'd have the three dots over here that don't cover rove of the surface area of the Esrog, so then that would be kosher, according to the Chazon Ish. Right? According to everyone, that would be kosher. That's not Barov Hekef, and it's not Rove Shetach either. It's not most of the surface area, so that would be kosher. Okay. That's the basic halacha of Shinui Marav. But the Gemara goes further, that b'chotem, on the chotem of the Esrog, even a mashu passels. Shinui Marav passels b'shnayim v'shloshim makomos below the chotem. What is the chotem? Chotem is the upper part of the Esrog. There's actually a big machlokas rishon in what the chotem means. We pass in like the Rosh, the Chasam Sofer says that the Morei Hora pass in like the Rosh, that Beis is called the Chotem, meaning the area where the Esrog goes slanted toward the top. The area where it's slanted toward the top. Others claim maybe Dafgan on the top Mamish by the Pitim, on the Pitim, or below the Pitim, that area that's right on top by the Pitim, like Gimel, or on the Pitim Mamish, Dalet, or the area where it starts to slant, that, the whole hekev of the Esrog, Aleph, the whole hekev of the Esrog around, that's called the Chotem, but we paskin like Beis. You assume that that whole top slanted area, including the area of the Pitim, that whole slanted area, that's called the Chotem, the Shipua, as they call it. B'chotem will possible mashu. Why is it possible mashu? What's the difference between the Chotem as opposed to the other parts of the Esrog? Says the poskim explain, it's all a function of what people see. If it's b'shnayim v'shloshim makomos, so then even if it's on the bottom of the Esrog, if it covers most of the Esrog, so then people will see, even if you hold it. But sometimes part of the Esrog is not covered, it's uncovered, people can see it, so people can see it, so then it's lacking hada. But if it's not b'shnayim v'shloshim makomos, if it will not cover most of the surface area of the Esrog, if people are not going to see it, it's not a problem. But in the Chotem, people see it easily, even if it's one blotch, people are going to see it, so therefore it's going to be a psul of hadar in the Chotem, even b'mashu. Not only a blotch, but even b'mashu, it doesn't even have to cover most of the area of the Chotem. Even b'mashu, even a little bit, is going to be a problem. So that's why you see people, they look at a srogim, and they're constantly checking that top. You want to check that top. But be careful that there's nothing there. Because they're afraid that if you'll have a shinu mara, mara shachar, mara lovan, something like that, it's going to pass. It's going to pass. Now, first of all, we should point out, before we go further, that brown doesn't passel. The Rosh only says black passels, but brown is not really a psul. It's not going to passel. It might not be as mehudar as an esrog that's completely clean, but it's not going to passel. A black dot passel. Sometimes you'll find, you look at an esrog, it has a black dot, not a brown dot. It's very dark. It has a black. So the black dots can passel. Stay away from that. Even one dot black dot. Has some brown dots on top. Have to take into account other things, but the brown dot is not going to passel. It might not be as mehudar, but it's not going to passel the same as a black or a white dot. How do you have to look at an esrog to determine whether it has dots or not? You know, it depends. You look at an esrog at arm's length, you might not see as much as if you look at it, you know, if you take off your glasses and look at it, or put your glasses on, or use a magnifying glass. You'll see people walk around with they take out a magnifying glass and start to look at sometimes you can't go to certain esrog merchants if you don't have a magnifying glass. That's like a status symbol to show that you've arrived, that you know how to look at an esrog. So the Magen Avraham probably would say that you don't need the magnifying glass. The Magen Avraham quotes a Mabit, one of the Poskim, who says that a Chazozis and other Shinim Mare only passel an esrog if it's nikar la'ayin, if you can see it, if the eye can see it when you hold the esrog in your hand. Meaning you hold it in a normal way. No one looks at an esrog so close. It's not the normal way. You know, you look at anything at arm's length. You look at a piece of paper at arm's length. You don't look at it so close. So the Mabit says you look at an esrog the same way that you look at everything else. And it's very mustaber, because if the reason why an esrog is possible, if it has a shinim marib and mashu in the chotem, is because it's more recognizable, so you have to judge based on how people normally look at things. If people are not going to look at it like this, very, very close to the eye, so it doesn't matter that you can see it if you look very carefully. You have to look at it at a distance. You look at it at a distance and you can see it, so that should be enough. There are people who will look at an esrog and look at a shinui mara with a magnifying glass, but I think people have the magnifying glass for a different reason, not to look at the shinui mara, but rather the magnifying glass might be very important if the esrog is chaser. Sometimes you'll see someone will ask someone with a longer beard, you know, he'll say, do you think it's chaser? So to look to see whether the esrog is chaser, sometimes there's a thorn can take off a little bit of the esrog, a little bit of the skin. So the question is, how far deep is it going? If it's just on the surface, that's not called chaser. It has to go into the esrog. So sometimes they'll look with a magnifying glass to see if it's chaser. Chaser is a metzius. So maybe they'll look with a magnifying glass, because if you have to determine the metzius, whether it's missing something or not, you gotta look, however you can look. That determines the metzius. But to look for shini mara with a magnifying glass, I'm not so sure that you're mechuyev to do that. How about bletlach? Bletlach is the Yiddish word for skips. The Shulchan Aruch, Simin Tafresh Memches. Look at this. Tafresh Memches. In Tafresh Memches, Sifu Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch describes that Chazazis is Kemin Avabuo Shiesh Ben Mamash and Makomo Nikar Bemishmush. You can feel it. The Chazazis is something substantive. It's a discoloration that's substantive. You can feel it on the Esrik. So some of the Achronim discuss these Bletlach. What are bletlach? They're scabs on the esrog. How do they develop? So the way it's described in the Svarim is that when thorns hit the esrog, so the esrog skin heals and it develops a scab, just like a human being. You know, if you get poked by something, or you get scratched, so then you develop a scab. So I'm not sure if the scabs fall off the esrog over time. Scabs do fall off a human being over time. But that's what the bletlach are. If the bletlach are there, if the bletl is there when the esrog is cut off the tree, it's not going to fall off after that. I'm not sure if it falls off, you know, if it somehow, if it redevelops its skin, maybe it depends on how far the esrog is, how mature the esrog is, how fully developed the esrog is. But if a person has a bletl on the esrog, that's a discussion that the post can have. What's the din? Let's say they are palpable, you can feel them. So do they pass on the esrog or not? The Maril is of the opinion that they are not Mara Esrog. They have a din of Chazazis, and they'll pass all the Esrog if you have them, B'shnayim V'shloshim Makomos. They're exactly the same as a Chazazis, as a Shuni Mara. The Chumash Hadeshen has a very important Shuva, which the Rama quotes. Chumash Hadeshen assumes that even if these Bletlach, even if these scabs are palpable, and they're above the surface of the Esrog, above the skin, they're still kosher. They're not, they're considered Mara HaEsrog. Quotes from some Rishonim like this, they are Mara HaEsrig, and they're not going to passel. It's a big kula, because according to the Chumash Hadeshen, what emerges is that even if you have bletlach b'shnayim v'shloshim makomos, you have them in two or three places, they're still not going to passel. It's not a shini mara. It's not going to passel. Now, again, it's not as mehudar as an esrig that doesn't have bletlach, but again, if you're looking for psulim, so if the chotim is completely clean and you have a bletl or two on the bottom, I wouldn't worry about the bletl or two on the bottom, because it's completely clean on top. The bletlach are kosher. They're not going to pass according to the Chumash Hadeshen. So if it's a completely clean esrog on top, then there's what to talk about. Then maybe you should choose that esrog. Okay, that's a very important discussion whether bletlach will passel or not. I think many assume, like the Chumash Hadeshen, that it doesn't passel. It's viewed as Mara esrog, and even if it's in two or three places, it's okay. How about if you have black dots? You see, the Rush, when he said that Chazazis is not only that Shini Mara is not just the Chazazis, but even if you have a Mara Shach, a Mara Lovan, he's talking about a black splotch on the Esrog. A black splotch, big discoloration. Let's say it's not a big discoloration. Let's say you only have black dots. It's very rare. I don't think I've ever seen an Esrog with large black discoloration on it. That's like a collector's item Esrog. Maybe the Sefer has examples of that, but we don't. I don't remember seeing such an example. Quite a strange sight. You can understand why the Rush will say that it's not a Mara Esrog. This is not black splotches. Right? It's quite a strange sight. But it's very common to have dots. Not so common to have black dots. It's more common to have brown dots, but you could have black dots every so often. What's the status of the black dots? So because they're common, according to the Chumash Hadeshen's logic when it comes to bletlach, shouldn't be a problem at all. Right? It might not be as mehuder, but basically black dots should be the same status as brown dots. It's not a shini mara, so then on the chotim, if you have one black dot, shouldn't be a problem. Shouldn't be a problem. So, Rabbi Shechter felt that black dots are not a problem. He's very strong about this. He says, first of all, he thinks the Rush is only talking about a large black area. And what's more, he felt very strongly that the only kind of discoloration that's going to be a problem is if it's a discoloration machmas ipush, as some of the Achronim say. Ipush means decay. that the esrog has decayed a little bit in that area. Rabbi Shachter felt that many of the black dots, that's the way the esrog grows. A person often has discolorations on his face or his body. The esrog can also have discolorations. That's a mara esrog. And some also point out that a lot of the black that you find on esrogim is really just dirt. Some of the mochrei esrog, they're well trained to be able to take off some of these black dots. Every esrog dealer has to have a toothpick in his mouth. If he doesn't have a toothpick, you don't think that he's a real esrog merchant. That's not a halacha moshe Sinai. But they often have these toothpicks because they'll wet the toothpick and try to take off a little bit of the, they'll work with the esrog and take off that black dot because, you tell them you're not going to buy it unless the black dot comes off. They'll take the black dot off. The question is whether they'll make the esrog closer as a result. So you got to be very careful about that. I'm not sure I would suggest for the esrog merchant, he's not going to take responsibility for the esrog. If you want the esrog, the black dot comes off, he'll then convince you that it's not chosin. You gotta be very careful about it. But as a general rule, I would say that maybe even some of the black dots might not necessarily be a problem. It's not so clear. Some poskim are more concerned about the black dots, but the brown dots definitely are not going to passel any eser. They might not be as mehudar, as an eser that's completely clean, but it's definitely not going to passel the eser. Okay. How about green? Okay, so the Mishnah, Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, quotes the Machlokes Tanoim, Mishnah in Sukkah, where the Yora Kikarti is kosher apostle. Let's say the esrog is as green as a leek. So Rabbi Yechiel Michel Stern was kind enough to put leeks over here on the side. So the problem is there are different parts to the leek. There are some parts of the leek where you have a dark green, and then there's another part of the leek where it's sort of lightish. It's lighter. So if we're going to be macher for the light green, you're going to passel a lot of this esrogim. So there's Yerushalmi, the Tosfos quotes, that has a little bit of a different gear. So not Yorah Kikarti, but Yorah Ki'isve Hasodin. Green like grass. So I think that's what most poskim assume. That Yorah Kikarti, the karti that we're talking about, is Ki'isve Hasodin, very green, like you have in the esrog on the right. I'm not sure if it's so clear. Can you see the green? It's like a real deep green. The lighting is... okay. A deep green. So that's it. That's a machlokes. It's not even clear that it's possible. Some say it's even that's kosher. But some say that it's possible. And we paskin it's possible. It doesn't matter that others say it's kosher, but we paskin that it's possible. But the question is why? Why is green possible? That's a big machlokes haposkin. The Bach is of the opinion that green is a shinui mara. Just like black and white, a black splotch, certainly. Forget about the black dots. A black splotch or a white splotch. A green esrog is more than just a green splotch. The whole thing is green. Or even if it were just a green splotch, that's a shini mara. The Bach says a shini mara. It passels in shnayim or shlosh makomos and in the chotem b'mashu. The Magen Avraham disagrees. The Magen Avraham says it's not a shini mara. It's a mara esrog. But the problem is when an esrog is green, that demonstrates that it's not ripe yet. It's lo nigmar perim. The esrog is not ripe. That's why it's possible. It's not a shini mara, but it's not right. So why does it matter? It's still going to be possible anyway. The nafkamina is, let's say it started to change color. Let's say it's not completely green, but it started to turn yellow, started to change color. So the Magen Avraham would say that as long as it started to change color, that indicates that it's already right. The fact that it's already starting to change color, let me say that better. The nafkamina is if we know that the esrog is going to change color. That's the nafkamina. Nafkamina is if we know that the esrog is going to change color, we have a tvius ayin. Right? We have a tvius ayin in this esrog. Let's say you saw the esrog and it was very dark green. And now it's a lighter green, but it's still green enough that it's ki'isve hasod and it's possible. But you know that it's going to change color. The Magen Avraham would say, even in that case where it's completely green, it's still going to be kosher. Right? The Magen Avraham would say, as long as you know that it's going to change color, then it's going to be kosher. But the Bach would say, no, a shini mara passels. But the Mishnah Berurah says that even the Magen Avraham, this is what we were saying before, the Mishnah Berurah says, even the Magen Avraham holds it has to change a little bit in order to be kosher. You see, technically speaking, the way the poskim say it over, the nafkamina between the Magen Avraham and the Bach is, if you know it's going to be changing color, even if it hasn't changed bichlal, the Magen Avraham would say it's fine. The Mishnah Berurah adds on a little bit. He says he thinks even according to the Magen Avraham, it's got to start to change color a little bit. Okay, the Bach would say even if it starts to change color, it's still going to be possible because it's a Shini Mara, and on the Chotem it would be a problem. And the Magen Avraham would say that as long as you know it's going to change color, the Mishnah Berurah adds, as long as it's begun to change color a little bit, then it's ripened. We view that as a ripened esrog, and then it's going to be kosher. So how do we paskin in this big machlokas about green esrog? So many achronim are mekel. Mishnah Berurah and the Chazon Ish and the Chayei Adam, many achronim are mekel to assume that a green esrog is kosher. But some achronim claim that you should be machmir for the Bach. Baal Nefesh Yachmir, the Bikurei Yaakov, one of the Gedolei achronim in Hilchas Sukkah and Hilchas Dalet Minim, he says you should be machmir for the Bach. The Mishkanis Yaakov, Reb Chaim Volozhin, his big Talmud, wrote a whole tshuva. It's in Reb Chaim Volozhin's tshuvas, but they point out it's the Mishkanis Yaakov's tshuva. It's not Reb Chaim Volozhin's tshuva. There are different rayas, that there are different simonim that indicate that it's the Mishkanis Yaakov's tshuva. Rabbi Shechter is very machmir in this. Rabbi Shechter will not look at a green esrog. If there's any green in the esrog on the chotem, he won't look at it at all. He's very, very, very medactic. But many point out that you look at a lot of the pictures in the sukkah, right? The pictures that they sell to put in your sukkah of all the gedolim taking a lulav and esrog. Many of them, not all of them, but many of them are taking green esrogim. So clearly a lot of poskim are very makel for this. The chassidish poskim are very makel for this. There are those chassidim who claim you should dafka take a green esrog because the Zohar says that an esrog is yorok. And yorok means green. So the Mishkan Yisrael says yorok doesn't mean green, yorok means yellow. It's machlokas what the word yorok means. I don't know. I think in our circles, look, if you can get a yellow esrog, it's certainly better to get a yellow esrog. If there's green on the chotem, most circumstances where there's green on the chotem, it's not green ki'isve hasada. It's a little bit of a light green. Maybe light green, you could be makel on anyway, but that's not called green. So you could put two and two together. According to the Magen Avraham, since the esrog has already started to change color, so maybe it'll be kosher anyway. And even according to the Bach, maybe that green is not a problem anyway. So unless it's really a dark green on the chotem, I'm not sure that it's such a serious issue. Rebbe Shechter, of course, would be very machmir. So if you could get a completely yellow esrog, matov. But if you have a very nice esrog that might have a little bit of a light green on the chotem, I'm not sure that you have to be so machmir for that. Questions? So there was a hand up? Yeah.
Is Reb Shechter only machmir when the green is on the chotem, or even, he's machmir for the Bach?
He would assume that it's a Shinei Maris. If it's b'shnayim ashloshim makomos, even if it's below the chotem, it'd still be a problem. It functions like a Shinei Maris. Okay, what's the order of priorities when it comes to hiddur mitzvah? You have an esrog. Right, so do I care only about the cleanliness or do I care about other things? So many poskim assume that cleanliness is everything. Even if the esrog does not have a nice giddel, it doesn't have a symmetrical form, they don't care. As long as it's completely clean on the chotem, that's the game changer. That's the koveya for many poskim. I always found that very difficult, because if the whole idea of hiddur mitzvah is that it's recognizable as something more beautiful, there's an aesthetic beauty to it, so then the gidul should play a role as well. I mean, imagine a person takes an esrog that's completely clean, but it looks like a banana, literally. You know, it's like bent over to the side. It might be completely clean, but it certainly doesn't look so beautiful to the onlooker. Right? So I definitely think that the giddle should be taken into account as well. You have to take into account the symmetrical form, but everything in the right measure. You have to take into account the cleanliness too. If you have a very clean esrog that the form is not perfect, so maybe the cleanliness will be koveya. If you have an esrog that you're looking at different esrogim and some are cleaner than others, and one looks really nice, has a very nice form, it has a couple of dots on it, but it has a very nice form, and the other one doesn't have such a nice form, it's a little bit cleaner. I'm not so sure I would opt for the one that's a little bit cleaner, because the one that's symmetrical might have another hiddur, a different kind of hiddur, that the giddle is nicer. I think you should consider that too, even though there are many poskim, many gedolei haposkim are not concerned about the symmetry bichlal. They'll only look at the cleanliness. I mean, you'll give them an esrog to look at. They just look at the cleanliness. They don't even see it, really. They don't even see the symmetry, because they're holding on to the esrog, and they just look at the cleanliness. That's all they look at. Rabbi Simon likes to tell a story that Rabbi Willig said about himself that he would, he takes 50 esrogim and he sort of looks at 50 esrogim, and then he'll choose a couple of esrogim from those, and he'll bring them to his wife, and she chooses the esrog that he that he uses. Why? Because she has a good sense, his wife has a good sense of aesthetic beauty. So he'll choose mitzad halacha, you know, what's in the parsha, and his wife actually chooses the most beautiful esrog because she has a better sense of the aesthetic beauty of what the esrog is supposed to look like. So that shows you that the eye also plays a role. It's not just the halachic issue that, you know, if it's clean or not clean. The perception, right? The human perception also plays a role in this equation as well. Now there are also, I'll end this segment by saying that there are those who choose hidurim that are not in the poskim at all. Like there are some chassidim who dafka want to pick an esrog with a gartel. What's an esrog with a gartel? It doesn't have a black thing stuck in it. Now an esrog with a gartel is that it's like a multi-layered esrog. It's like a little, like multi-layers to it. Like it looks like it has a gartel in the middle. So I don't know where this is in posting. Maybe there's some kind of misora to pick an esrog with a gartel. I think anyone who doesn't wear a gartel doesn't have to pick an esrog. That's that. I think that's the general rule. I don't think that's a hitter for most litvashiyim. Okay, that's in terms of the esrog. How about a lulav? What's there to look for in a lulav? So first of all, the lulav should be fresh. It should look green. We have a general picture of a lulav? No. Okay. The lulav should be fresh, look green. And sometimes you look at a lulav and it's like white a little bit. It's not such a green. The leaves are not so green. It's nice to pick a good green lulav. Secondly, the leaves should be shakeable. You should be able to get what the poskim call kiskus ho'alim. Kiskus even sounds like what a lulav does when it shakes. Right? The kiskus. It should be able to shake properly. That's part of the mitzvah. Nanuim is part of the mitzvah. If it doesn't shake, if it's like stuck together, that's not a lulav mehudar either. What kinds of things will pass a lulav? So the most basic, most famous psul is what's called nechleka hatiyomis. If the tiyomis is split, what's a tiyomis? The big machlok is what the tiyomis is. The Rif in the Rambam, some Rishonim assume that the tiyomis is as follows. We know that a lulav, each leaf of a lulav, is really a twin. It's made of two parts, and they're stuck together. So the Rif and the Rambam assume that nechleka hatiyomes means that a majority of the leaves of the lulav, are split in the tiyomes. They're split on the top before the shedra. The shedra is where the you know, the thick part of the lulav, the thick part of the stem begins. That's the shedra. Once there's no more thick part of the stem, and it's just leaves, that's not called the shedra anymore. So what the Rif and the Rambam say is that nechleka hatiyomis means that rove of the alim of the lulav. You see there are leaves over here and leaves on the side. You look at all the different leaves. Well, the leaves actually can come below the shedra. They can come on the sides of the shedra too. So the Rif and the Rambam assume nechleka hatiyomis means that rove of the leaves of the lulav are split. They're split. That's very rare. If we'd follow the Rif and the Rambam, you wouldn't really have a problem. The problem, though, is the Gaonim. The Rush quotes from the Gaonim that Nechleka HaTiyomes means that the middle leaf is split. The Tiyomes is the middle leaf that comes out of the Shedra, like you have over here, with the arrow on top. The Tiyomes is that middle leaf that also comes as a twin. Nechleka HaTiyomes means that that leaf is split. That leaf is split. That's a much bigger chumrah, because that's only one leaf. That leaf could be split, even if the others are not split. So it's a big machlokas, the Mechaber and the Ramah Ladina, who the Paskin like. The Ramah is machmir. The Ramah is machmir, like this Gaonim, that Nechleka HaTiyomes can pasel, even if it's only the middle leaf. Even if it's only the middle leaf. But the question is, how much does that middle leaf have to be split in order to pass? That's the kick. How much does the leaf have to be split? So most Rishonim would say it has to be split for Rubo. What does that mean, Rubo? It means a majority of the leaf from the top of the lulav to the shedra. The shedra is where the spine begins, as is delineated in the picture right over here. So Nechleka HaTiyomes, according to Rav Rishonim, is where that middle leaf is split for Rubo in most of that area from the tip of the lulav until the shedra. Rubo Kekula. So if row of it is split, then that's like kol hatiyomis nechleka, and then it's going to be pasul. The Ran made a Yesh Omrim famous. There's one sheet in the Rishonim that holds that even if Nechleka HaTiyom is b'mashehu, it's also going to be possible. That's a big chumah. If the Tiyomes, so first of all, it's a chumah gabi chumah, to assume like the Gaonim that it's even in one leaf, and secondly, to assume that even if it's Nechleka only b'mashehu, that's also going to possible. Let me say that even better. The Yeshomer of the Ran is that even Nechleka b'miyuto, and the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Chaya Odom that says b'miyuto means b'mashu. Not everyone even agrees that b'miyuto means b'mashu. But that's the way it's set over. That the Yeshomer holds that even Nechleka b'mashu is going to be a problem. Wow. So the Ramah says it's a mitzvah min amuvchar to take a lulav. That's the middle leaf is not split at all. To be choshish for the Yeshomer of the Ran. The Ramah quotes the Yeshomer in the Ran. It's l'chatchili. You should try to do such a thing. That's what the Ramah says. But the Mishnah Berurah says nothing doing. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Gra. The Vilna Gaon says that there's no chumra lechatchila bichlal to do this. As long as it's not nechleka berubo, it's kosher lechatchila, says the Gra. And the Mishnah Berurah says it's mistaber. You know, the Ran himself doesn't agree with this Yeshomer. And the Shulchan Aruch doesn't even paskin like the Ramah. The Shulchan Aruch says that only if rove of the leaves on nechleku is it going to be a problem. So there's what to be makel for him. But the Ramah, Ramah is machmer. Right, so a lot of people out there try to be machmer. Try to be machmer as much as they can. They try to find a lulav that's not split at all. They're checking lulavim for an hour or two to make sure that they can find a lulav that's not split at all. To be machmer for this Yeshomer in the Ran, the Chaya Adam's understanding of the Yeshomer in the Ran, that Nechleka, even b'miyuto, means that even if it's b'mashu, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem. It's a big chumra. Big chumra, because to explain even more, the Mishnah Berurah writes, why is Nechleka b'mashu going to be a problem? Well, what kind of a strange idea? Rubo kakulos. If Rubo is not Nechleka, what should be the problem? Mishnah Berurah says he thinks it's a dinder rabban and it's a chashash, that if it's Nechleka b'mashu, it'll get split even more. But if you know it's not split even more, why can't you take the lulav? It should be kosher l'mahadrin. It's a strange idea, right? If it's only a dinder rabban, you should be able to check your lulav. And if it's not Nechleka, if it's not Nechleka Verubo, so you can make a brach on it. Okay, so if as a result of the Nanuim that day, it becomes Nechleka Verubo, you won't take it the next day, but Lachar, you should be able to take it that day. But that's what the Poskim say. But even there are other reasons to say Nechleka B'mashu is puzzle. Maybe it's not Lekicha Tama. Maybe it's Choser. It's viewed as though it's not a complete Lekicha. Maybe that's the problem. So this wouldn't be such a big issue. If all we would say is that Nechleka HaTiyomes is puzzle, you know, there's a Yesharim that says b'mashehu, that even if it's Nechleka b'mashehu, it's possible. I'm not sure that we would be so machmer for that Yesharim. But the reason why it's important to consider trying to take a lulav that's not split at all is for another reason. A totally different reason. And that is the Gemara says that if the lulav is ovid kehemnik, if it's like a hemnik, it's possible. It certainly sounds scary. It's ovid kehemnik. What does hemnik mean? So if you look at the Gemaras, just if you thumb through the Gemara, you'll see there are some pictures on the side. So this is one of those dafim where there's a picture. The picture on the side looks something like this. Looks pretty terrible, pretty bad, right? Ovid kehemnik is like a pitchfork. It's like a fork, meaning the leaves are coming out in a way that they're completely separate from each other. Ovid kehemnik is possible. So even if Nechleka HaTiyomes is only going to be possible berubo, but if it's Ovid Kehemnik, that's gonna be puzzle even b'mashu according to some poskim. That really got the ball rolling. That really made people scared. There's a comment that the Levush Srod, one of the Achronim on the side of the Shulchan Aruch has. He says that even if it's Ovid Kehemnik b'mashu, it'll puzzle. And he's saying even if you'll go like the Gra, even if you assume that Nechleka is only a problem berubo, but if it's so separate, right? If it's kehemnik, so then that even b'mashu, that's going to be a problem. So the question is now, what is ovid kehemnik? What's not ovid kehemnik? How separate does it have to be? Even b'mashu, what does it mean b'mashu? I mean, so basically, if it's nechleka, even b'mashu, it should be possible because it's always going to be kehemnik. I mean, that's b'mashu, right? So most poskim are not so machmir to assume that if it's split a little bit, that's automatically kehemnik. Probably not. The Marsham, one of the big Gedolei HaPoskim in Europe, the Barjana Rav, he said that the Koveh is that if you can like put the lulav down on a table and the leaves somehow come together, you know, if you put a little bit of pressure on it, the leaves come together, that's not kehemnik. That's not kehemnik bichlam. Kehemnik means that that when you look at the lulav, even if you put it down, you put a little bit of pressure on the leaves, it's not going to come together. It remains separate. And sometimes you'll see this. You'll look at a tiyomis and a lulav, and the top leaves are sort of pointing away from each other. They won't go near each other. That I wouldn't take. That might be a hemnik, and that could be a problem. It doesn't look as bad as the picture on the side of the Gemara, but right, that's just an extreme picture. But if the tops of the tiyomis, if the two tops of the middle leaf are really separate from each other, and even if you put it down, they remain separate, even if you put a little bit of pressure on it, they remain separate, I wouldn't take that lulav. But if you can't really see that the tiyomis is split on top, you look at a lulav, it looks pretty good, and then when you start to fiddle with it, by the way, be very careful not to touch the tip. Right? You can fiddle with the leaves, but don't touch the tip, because you can really break it then. But if you, when you start to fill with it, then you see that the tiyomis are a little bit split. So there, you only have to discuss whether nechlecha tiyomis is a problem if it's split beruba. Right? You wouldn't have to look at it and say, oh, it's definitely a hemnik. That's not a hemnik. If you only see that it's split when you examine it carefully, that's definitely not a hemnik. And then according to the Gra, you probably could take it lechatchila, obviously if it's not nechlecha beruba. Right, but you'd be able to take it lechatchila as long as it's not a hemnik, which means that before you looked at it so carefully, it didn't look like it was like the two tops of the leaves are really apart from each other. A common question that people have is: let's say you have a lulav that has a little bit of a. This is the hemnik. That's another example of hemnik that he has a picture, which are separate. You see that. That's kehemnik, where the tiyomis is really separate from each other. You see, there's no way that those two pieces are going to come together. Okay. This is a lulav that has what they call kara on top. Kara is like a little bit of a brown substance. A brown substance on top. You're familiar a little bit, right? The brown substance on top. Is that good or not good? People, you know, you tell the person that if the tiyomis is split, the lulav is puzzles. He says, oh great, I'll take it with kara. Then I know it's not split. He's so sure. I wouldn't take a lulav that has kara on it for two reasons. First of all, you don't know if the tiyomis is split or not. Take away the kara, you'll see it might be split. It might even be a hemnik, because you can't see the top. That's reason number one not to take such a lulav. And secondly, you might not be yotze nanuim properly with such a lulav. You can't shake a lulav if it has kara. It's keeping it all together. You want to be able to shake the lulav. I wouldn't go near the lulav and they have kara on it. And sometimes, you know, the lulav also, they have these jaggedy edges on top. Don't go near that either. It should come straight to the top. It should come to the top. How about a lulav okum, or kofuf? Let's say it's curved or bent. So the Gemara says that a lulav that's okum, a lulav that's curved.
Curved. Mamish.
So if it's doma lamagal, if it looks like a sickle.
You know, a sickle. Looks something like that.
If it's doma lamagal, so then it's pasul. How is it curved? So it's either, if it's curved to the side, or if it's curved toward the front, meaning if you hold it with the shedra toward you, and it's curved toward the front, that's called okum. But if it's curved backwards, the Gemara says it's kosher. Meaning if it's curved toward you, if this is the individual, right, and the lulav is curved toward him, that's kosher. If it's curved to the sides, or if it's curved away, then that's going to be pasul. That's what the Gemara says. But doma lamagal has to look like a sitting. It really has to be curved to be pasul. How about a lulav that's kafuf, that's bent a little bit? A lulav that's kafuf. So, there's a big machlokas we've shown him. Let's say only the middle leaf is kafuf. The Rosh has a tshuva where he says that if only the middle leaf is kafuf, he thinks it's great. Not only... This is where many of the leaves are kafuf. The Mishnah Berurah says, even according to the Rosh, if many of the leaves are kafuf, he thinks it's a problem. But the Rosh says that if the one top leaf is kafuf a little bit, then that's great. Why is that great? Because there's less of a possibility that the tiyomis is going to be split if it's kafuf. So the Rosh says, I think that's great. This is what the Mochim call a knepel. Knepel. You got to know the lingo to be able to, you know, to firzach, you know, to be able to handle yourself. You know, if not, they're not going to give you a good set there. Right, so that's a knepel. So many chassidim like to get a knepel. They feel that the knepel is better. They follow the Rosh. I don't know where they have a mesorah to do that, but some people like a knepel. Most litvish poskim don't go near it, because again, it's kafuf, it's not as mahudar. Even if the tiyomis might not be split, because since it's curved over, it's like it protects itself a little bit better. But they don't like it because it might be kafuf. And the Ran, the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Ran, who says that if the lulav is kafuf, even b'mashu is going to be a problem. Yes? I think you might be able to shake it, but it's bent over. Bent over a little bit. Some of the svarim say that there's a hidden mitzvah to take a lulav that's completely straight. It's a question in the poskim. Some poskim say yes, some poskim say no. It's not so clear. It's probably best to try to take a lulav that's as straight as you can make it. I think if it's going to be a little bit bent, but it's not split at all, it's probably better to take the one that's not split. But if it's very bent, even if it's only to the side, I'd probably try to take a lulav that's straight. Yes?
We said it has to be shakeable. Does that mean all of the leaves need to be shakeable? Because a lot of times...
You can make a good kiskus.
Because the top like few are like stuck together, but on the sides, like lower down, it makes like a good shape.
If you can get a good kiskus, that's okay. But the top should be stuck together. I mean, you don't want the tiomas to be split. So I'm not sure exactly how much...
The top, like, few, like...
Okay, if you can get a good kiskus, you're okay. Hadassim. What's with hadassim? So the length of the hadassim, there are three hadassim, right? Anaf eitz avos, we darshan, there are three words, three hadassim. It's supposed to be three tvachim. Three tvachim is anywhere from about 9.5 inches to 11.5 inches. The Chazanish would say it's 11.5. How do we measure these three tvachim? So, first of all, the Mishnah Berurah writes that we only measure in the stem. What does that mean? Right? Not in the leaves on top. Sometimes the hadas has leaves on top without stem. You have a little bit extra of just leaves. You feel it. There's no stem there. The stem ends a little bit earlier. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from Rishona that we don't measure. Those leaves don't come into the equation. You have to have three tefachim of leaves with stem. How about starting from the bottom? Where do you start from? Sometimes you can have a long stem without leaves. So the poskim assume that it's from the first grouping of leaves. You start from the first grouping of leaves until the end of the stem. That's the shear. You need a shear of gimel tefachim. Let's say lechumra will have 11.5 inches. Not so difficult to have 11.5. The typical hadas is going to be much more than 11.5 inches. Okay, so that's what you should have, 11.5 inches from the lowest grouping of leaves until the end of the stem. We know that Chazal understood from anaf eitz avos. The word avos means mishulosh. It means that it has to be in triplicate. The hadassim have to be come with leaves that are in triplicate. Come three together. Could be more than that, but it can't be less than three. What does mishulosh mean? What does in triplicate mean? So Rashi has a big chumer. He assumes that they literally have to come out of the same point. It's a very big chumer. You're not going to find hadassim like that. But we paskin like Taisus and the Rosh, who assume that as long as you can, the way that the Chazanish explains them, as long as they're smuchim udvukim zelozeh, that's the lashon of the Taisus and the Rosh, and the Chazanish explains that means that if you can draw a line from the stem of one hadas to the stem of the other one, and the line will go through both stems, that's okay. But if you draw the line and it won't go through the second stem, then they're not on the same level, that's not coming out of the same area, and that's not going to be mishulish. Okay, so you should look at the hadas and see that they're basically coming out of the same area. It doesn't have to be literally the same, but it should be close enough that you could draw the line through. The Mishnah says that if nashu olav, if the leaves of the hadas fall off, or they get dried up, so then it's possible. What does that mean, nashru olav, that they fell off? How much has to fall off in order to be possible? So you have all the different extremes in the Rishonim. Some say that you need the full length of gimel tefachim with no leaves falling off bichlal in order to make a kosher. The Rambam takes the other extreme, that as long as you have one grouping of three remaining, it's kosher. And we follow the middle of the road. We follow the middle of the road. The Rishonim who say that l'chatchila you should have kulo mishulosh. So that's what it says on those plastic bags, right? L'chatchila you should have a kulo mishulosh. But b'di'evit, if ruva mishulosh, that's fine. So that's what we do. We try to have a kulo mishulosh. That's the best thing to do. And the mishulosh doesn't have to be consecutive. It means that within the area that you're talking about, let's say you have a hadas that's 13 inches or 14 inches. So if rove of that is mishulosh, that's okay. L'chatchila you should have kulo mishulosh in the 11.5 inches, but b'di'evit, if you have ruba mishulosh, even if it's not consecutive, that should be good enough. It's always kedai to buy You know, now you don't look at Hadassim individually. They sell packages. It's always good to buy the Aleph Chazanish, because the Chazanish is the longest, right? Reb Chaim Noah is the other extreme. The Chazanish is going to be the longest Hadass. And if you buy Aleph, that means that it's as close as possible to Kula Meshulash. It's never perfect, but it's as close as possible to Kula Meshulash. I mean, you can try, but, you know, it's very hard to get Kula Meshulash. Certainly, if you're going to be buying from packages, it's hard to look at it in the package. I mean, unless you're going to rip open the package and give it back, but they're not going to want to take it back. So, you know, if you realize it's not Kula Meshulash and the package says it's Kula Meshulash, why will the next guy buy it? So, you know, it's a little bit of a Russian roulette that you're playing, but you can look at it a little bit in the bag, turn it to the back, because the front always has, you know, the fancy colors. So turn it to the back to see the Hadassim. That's the trick. You can look in the window a little bit. But if you buy the Kulo Chazanish, Aleph, so maybe you'll be Zoicha and you'll have the Hadassim that might be Kula Meshulash. And worst comes to worst, you'll definitely have Ruba Meshulash and you'll be Yotzei. And of course, we know that the leaves of the Hadass have to be smooth on the outside. They shouldn't be jagged or serrated. Aravas. What's with the Arava? So first of all, from the Pasuk Arve Nachal, we learned that you need two Aravas. The Gemara Daf Lamed Aleph in Sukkah says that there are three simonim for a kosher Arava. One is that the Arava has a red stem. Secondly is that its leaf is elongated, it's not circular. And third, that the leaf has a smooth edge. It's quite a tall order, especially the issue of the red stem. There are some aravas that they sell that have a green stem. They don't have a red stem. What's the status of those aravas? So there are more quotes in the Beis Yosef that, technically speaking, only if the stem is white is it possible. If it's green, it's also okay. So even though l'chatchila, it should have a red stem, if the arava has a green stem, it's okay. The Mishnah writes that if the Arava is Niktam Rosha, or if Yovshu Rov Oleha, or Noshu Rov Oleha, if its leaves are dry or if they fall off, then the Arava is Potzel. Niktam Rosha, if it's cut off on top. Some are Machmir to have an Arava, to buy an Arava that's what they call with Lavluv. Lavluv. What's a Lavluv? Lavluv is that little, it's like a little hairy kind of thing that grows out of the top of the Arava. I don't know if I'd call it hairy, but, you know, there's like a little leaf that's growing out of the middle. What's the purpose of buying aravas with a lavluv? Because that's a guarantee that it's not niktam rosha. It can't be cut on top. Some have pointed out, even if it doesn't have a lavluv, if it has like little leaves on top, that also sort of is an indicator that it's not cut on top. It doesn't have to have a lavluv, that little piece. You'll see, some of the aravas have like a little leaf coming out on top. Even if it doesn't have that little leaf, you have smaller leaves toward the top. That also indicates that it's not niktam. So technically, from the Mishnah Berurah, you get the impression that only if most of the leaves of the Arava fall off is it going to be possible. But the Magen Avraham is machmir that you shouldn't have any of the leaves falling off. So that's why the poskim say you should be careful when you shove the Aravas, the Hadassim and the Aravas in the Koshikol. Be careful not to shove it too tightly, roughly, because you don't want any of the leaves, not of the Hadass, not of the Aravas, to fall off, because it could be that according to some poskim, l'chatchila, you really should be careful not to have any of the leaves falling off. Okay. We're running out of time, so let me just talk about some general issues. In terms of Hiddur Mitzvah, how much is a person supposed to spend for his set of Lulav and Esrog? So the Gemara in Bava Kamma says that Hiddur Mitzvah ad shlish b'mitzvah. He's supposed to spend for Hiddur Mitzvah up until a third of the Mitzvah. And there's a discussion, what does that mean, shlish? The Lashon of the Gemara is it shlish milagav or shlish milabar? Shlish from the inside or shlish from the outside? Just to keep it simple, that either means what we call a third or what we call a half. Meaning if you add the third, it'll be a third of the whole. So let's say you can buy a kosher set of dalamina for $30, just for argument's sake, for $30. So the machlokes is whether shlish b'mitzvah is 40 or 45. Right? Either you say that the third is taking a third of the 30 and adding it, or 45, because once you have the 45, a third of 45 is 15. So if you take off the third, then you'll have your 30. Okay, so you're certainly not mechuyev to spend more than $50 for a lulav and esrog, because I'm pretty sure you can buy a kosher set for $30. Some, it might not be the most mechuyev set, but that's a set that's kosher. So you're not mechuyev to spend more than a third. B'mitzvah, a third of the cost of the mitzvah for the hidden mitzvah. But the post can point out that if a person has extra money and he spends his money on lots of different things, he'll go on a vacation here and he'll buy a fancy coffee, he'll buy Starbucks every morning. And if you're spending money on lots of other things, so then for a mitzvah, it's a very nice thing to spend a little bit more money. I'm not saying that you have to spend $120, but if you want to spend $60, it's nishkefelach. It's not the worst thing in the world. You spend a little bit more for other things in life, so maybe it's appropriate to spend a little bit more for a mitzvah as well. The Machne Ephraim is a famous chumer when it comes to buying a lulav and eser. He writes that the Gemara Bava Metzia says Dvar Torah Mo'os Konos. Actually, Machlokas is Samaroyim, but Rabbi Yochanan says Dvar Torah Mo'os Konos. Min HaTorah Lukone B'Kesef, but Midrabona Chazal were Oker Akinyan Mo'os for a certain reason we're not going to get into now. And they say that you should be Kone B'Meshicha by drawing something, not by giving money. But the Machne Ephraim says, since we know that the Dalaminim have to be Lachem, at least by Yom HaRishon, L'Lakachtem Lachem by Yom HaRishon, it has to belong to you, Min HaTorah. So he says the only way that you can buy a Dalaminim is with Kesef. If you buy it with Meshicha, Midrabanan, it belongs to you, Min HaTorah doesn't belong to you. So that's known as the Chumr of the Machne Ephraim, to use Dafka money to acquire the set of Dalaminim. And then the question is, what does money mean? Can I use a check? That's a big machlokas in the post, where the check really has a status of kesef for different halachas. So many have a chumra. You'll see a lot of people will buy a lulav and eser with cash. They'll dafka have cash. No matter how much, they're buying four sets, and it's, I don't know, $250, let's say, or $200, and they'll give cash. $20 bills coming out. It seems like it's like a diamond exchange out there. Right? What's this chumra to use cash? It's write out checks. No, they want to be machra for the machna fra to make sure min haTorah, the lulav and eser, actually belongs to them on the first day of Yom Tov. Okay, there are many other halachas in Dalaminim, but let's just conclude this segment by saying that there's a big Musar Haskel in Dalaminim, I think. And that is, very often a person spends a lot of time looking for a lulav and esrog before Yom Tov, and they find an esrog that they're happy with the esrog, but they're not so happy. They feel like there are some dots over here and some dots over there. But, you can't spend the kitchen sink on it. So they buy what they buy, and then they come to shul, and, you walk around Hoshanas, and you look at everyone else's lulav and esrog, and you say to yourself, well, why couldn't I find that lulav and esrog? That esrog looks gevaldik. It's symmetrical, has the giddel, and it looks clean, and it looks gevaldik. You should know, the rule of thumb is that if you get close to someone, you get close to his esrog, you'll see it's just as dirty as yours. It has the same dots. The grass always looks greener. The esrog hopefully does not look green. But the grass always looks greener on the other side of the fence. Be happy with what you have. Trust me, it's no worse. No worries. If a person is happy with what they have, that's the way to really achieve a sense of simcha. Okay, we'll stop here. Let me just add a brief thought about Yom Kippur.